district.
Thank you so much, Deputy Mayor, Washington, D.C., Lindsay Pierre. Appreciate it. All the best with the summit. All right, it's a Friday. Before we go, a quick look at the business of entertainment, and artificial intelligence is once again reshaping an industry, and this time it's music. AI music platform Suno has raised more than $400 million in fresh funding, and it's now valued at approximately $5.4 billion, making it one of the most valuable companies in the AI creative space. The company allows users to generate songs from simple text prompts, but its rapid growth comes amid ongoing copyright lawsuits. So what does this tell us about the future of creativity, intellectual property, and the business of culture? To discuss this, I'm joined by culture journalist and creative economy analyst Kenneth Ochedako, not in studio this time, but on Zoom. So Ken, Suno has raised more than $400 million and is now valued at $5.4 billion. What does this tell us about where investors think the future of music and creativity is heading? You're muted. You're muted, Ken.
Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear.
Right. If you would remember some months ago, I mean, we had just entered this new year, and on this same show, you asked me what I thought the future was going to be for the showbiz space. And one thing I told you was about the fact that the winners, the biggest winners, will be those that create platforms that draw the intersection or that bridge the intersection or bring together the areas of creativity, advantage of the ever-evolving AI space. And that is what we are seeing Suno do right now. So for me, my biggest takeaway right now is the fact that investors are no longer seeing the artificial intelligence as a support system for the creative space, but are now seeing it as a very core space that formed the basis for the creation of new innovations. And that is why we are seeing this amount of money being able to be raised by generative AI company Suno. And there's actually more to come, because it sort of gives a very significant signal to other investors as well to see the space as something that will not just take from creators, but also be able to provide consumers with that ability to customize whatever they want on the social media platforms as well. So AI is very powerful. And it's not also something that's going to be just limited to music, but it's going to be, you know, a bet on the future of what creativity is going to be and how accessible it will be for different spheres of the industry as well. So this is something that I see as a big step going forward, Darryl.
Ken, we're going to continue this conversation next week, but 30 seconds. Suno's rise comes with controversy, and the company continues to face lawsuits from major music labels or copyright and over copyright and training data. How significant is this legal battle? 30 seconds.
So essentially, what some of these controversies are about is the fact that whether or not these AI companies are allowed to use copyrighted content from creators. And so if, you know, some of these labels win against what Suno and other companies are doing, it means that they'll have the ability to justify the fact that what they have been doing so far is fair use. But if they lose out, then it means that they have to better compensate creators who own rights to some of these content that are being used to create or train some of these AI models that we are seeing, like Suno is doing so far, Darryl.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the lessons to learn in the coming weeks, I bet. Thank you so much. You're taking an early weekend. Looks like you're in a farm or something. Thanks, Ken, for joining us. And that's The Marketplace. More news on our website, myjoyonline.com/business. Enjoy your weekend.
To sovereignty, building Ghana's agricultural self-reliance through innovation. Agriculture remains one of Ghana's biggest employers, a key driver of the economy as well. Yet, many young people are reluctant to pursue careers in the sector. Now, this is due to challenges such as low income, poor working conditions, and effects of climate change. As part of Joy Business Agribusiness Month, we are taking a closer look at the Agriculture Workers Union, the state of the agriculture workers in Ghana. And we'll also take a look at how we can affect and attract more of these young people in the sector. Joining me for this conversation is Andrews Adokwe Tego, General Secretary of the General Agricultural Workers Union. This is the union that represents major parts of Ghana's agricultural workers. Mr. Tego, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me, and greetings to all farmers and agricultural workers in Ghana.
Wonderful. Today's conversation, we want to dive into the agricultural workers in Ghana. We want to look at some of the conditions that are affecting them, and also why most young people in Ghana are now not interested in pursuing agricultural careers. Now, to begin with, you are the General Secretary of the General Agricultural Workers Union. How would you describe the current state of agricultural workers in Ghana?
Thank you very much, and I congratulate Joy Business for picking agriculture as a subject and treating it, and then also locating the union as a very important partner in agricultural development in Ghana. And for this, we will go on exposing how we are growing as a country in agriculture and the challenges that the workers are facing. And the question you have asked, it's a pregnant question. I can use the whole day answering this question.
Break it down for
us. But we'll break it down, Sarah. I want to see agricultural workers in Ghana within two spheres.
Okay.
That is, those who are agricultural workers on wage, meaning that every month they receive wages. They have formal contracts.
Okay.
They have formal employers. And then the labor law in Ghana is covering them. And more importantly, they are unionized.
Okay.
And when I say unionized, it means they are in GAU. Yeah, they are in GAU. What? And then the other sector are those we call the peasants, self-employed rural workers. They are on their own. They do their own businesses. They grow their own crops and then mostly sell it for domestic consumption, or they make income for the small family that they have. So these are the two categories. And in the two categories, the needs are different. Those who have been unionized and are organized into groups, they are called local unions. They can be called cooperatives. They can be called associations. Once they are in the union, these are the people we will describe first. Now, once they are in the union, they are covered by the labor law.
Okay.
And they are covered by international standards. There are many, many international standards. For rest in agriculture, ILO Convention 141 covers one, and that is on the peasant rights. And then it also goes to 184 on occupational safety and health in agriculture. And these are covered, this covers what these people do. And the labor law also covers them as working people. And in the working environment, once there is a union and there is a formal relationship with an employer, there is a system that guides their operations. And that system is called collective agreements. So once a collective agreement, you know, you can have individual agreements. But when all the individuals come together, they have a collective agreement and they are in the union. And they are represented in negotiations by the union. So what we do is that how the employer and the worker must relate at the workplace is captured in the document. So when it comes to maternity protection, when a woman gets pregnant, what are the conditions? They are captured. Currently, it's 3 months, and then you can also take 3 months for other activities. That one, you take the first 3 months is full maternity leave.
Okay.
The second one is you take about an hour or two a day to breastfeed and take care of your baby. So you don't spend all the 8 hours at work.
Okay.
You arrange. So that's the first one. And then there are other progression conditions. When you want to go to school, what do you do? When you have a grievance, you have an issue. At all these things are captured in the collective agreement. And the management and the workers, that is represented by the union, are obliged to do what we call standing joint negotiation committee meetings every year, at least once, where we negotiate for the salaries of the workers. So every year we sit and we review those salaries. That is when you are unionized. And then any condition that affects the worker, the union represents the worker there at the workplace. And then in the implementation of the collective agreement, the union is behind you. We give legal representation. We support the individual worker under the collective agreement. So there are arrangements that are formal when it comes to formal agricultural workers. And when it comes to the informal, that is where we have the challenge. So in the 1979, the union that was normally white color people. When we say union, all of you are thinking about a union from the perspective of Choboy and then the strikes that we do.
Yeah.
Those are just small portions of the work we do.
Okay.
Our bread and butter work at the workplace is promoting workers' rights, promoting workers' welfare, and the workers are many. So every day, even as we were speaking, I received a call from one of my enterprises that I should be in Takoradi next week to finish a negotiation we have started for over 1,000 workers. Now, so this is the formal enterprise.
Okay.
Their safety conditions are captured. That this is what you do for safety to protect yourself. This is what you do, you cannot do at the workplace. They are all captured.
Now, will you say that the state of agricultural workers in Ghana is good?
That's why I did it into those that are organized by the union. There is a process. At least there is a mechanism for grievance handling. At least you cannot go, there is job security. You cannot go to work today and then the next morning the employer thinks that the last night you people met at a beer bar and then you misbehaved, so you can be sacked. No, your job is secured at the formal enterprises. So on that note, I can say that there is a certain level of security and progression at the formal place. At the informal place is the survival of the fittest. So to some extent, there is certain progress in agriculture. When you pick cocoa farmers and other crop farmers, you can see there are different things.
Yeah.
So there is a certain level of progress, but we have a long way to go. As we speak, the farmers have no pension. When I say farmers, I'm talking about the other category of agric workers. They have no pensions. You and I, on when we attain 60, Social Security will give us pension. They have no medical arrangements, apart from the national health insurance that we are rolling. At the workplace, there are other better conditions, the formal places. They have hospitals you can go. They have medical checkups you can do. But these people don't have that one.
Combining these two, you know, sectors together, what are some of the challenges that they are collectively facing?
Yeah, for us in the union, the first challenge is that they are not organized. Because now, when you are organized, the organization gives you a certain source of power.
Okay.
And then when government is also running services, government prefers to run services through organized groups. Because if you are not organized and it is a loan you are going for, if an individual, you can vanish. But if you are organized, there is security. The banks are comfortable giving credit facilities. Government is comfortable rolling out its plans. So the biggest one for me is they are not organized. And the unions have extended organization to people within the informal economy now. So if you want to join a union as a farmer, as a fisherman, as a cattle, a herdsman, today the unions are available. GAWU of TUC is available for you. The other challenges that they are facing is how to get the food that they produce from the farm to the consumer. And it is a lot of processes. Now, the first one is when they harvest, they already have post-harvest losses.
Okay.
So if you plant maize, the maize can grow very well. But when it comes to harvesting, we don't have the technology. So you still use the manual way of harvesting. In the process, on the farm alone, you will lose between 30 to 40% of the crop. And that is money. That is income lost. And those ones will be, and those who have the machines to harvest, they do almost 95% of their crop. Now, once they finish harvesting, in recent times, you have heard that there is what you call the food glut.
Yes.
That people harvest, farmers harvest, and they can't get market. And if they don't get the market, agriculture is seasonal.
Yes.
Climate change effects. Now you cannot predict rainfall. So when we are harvesting, we are all expecting that the sun will be shining.
Yeah.
But you saw this morning, the sun was so hot this morning. And around just 12 o'clock, we don't know whether the rain is going to fall in the afternoon or not. So climate change patterns have affected agriculture. So people are harvesting, but it is raining. And then because of the rain, they cannot also move the crops from the farm gate to the consumer. Let me take two roads.
Okay.
When you are let's say tomatoes from the north, corn, maize from the middle belt, that is Akuma Dai area, those areas. When we take fish from also that sector, and we are bringing it to Accra, what you go through because of the road infrastructure, especially between Kumasi and Accra. So transportation is also a big issue. Because of the bad road, transport owners will charge higher prices, and this the farmer must pay. So for the farmer to bring his food to the consuming point, he must go through post-harvest challenges, he will go through transport challenges, and then by the time he gets to Accra, there is a group that buys it.
Okay.
And he has no power to negotiate. Because if you leave the tomato, you leave the maize, you leave the crop, it will perish. Mm-hmm. It will rot. So people determine the prices for which food must be bought. Mm-hmm. And we think that these are things that are not supporting and not making agriculture lucrative enough. We talked about young people coming there in your introduction. That's why I said your introduction is a pregnant introduction. When you want to talk about young people, it's also a whole topic.
We'll
young people, the agriculture space, when you mention agriculture, and then you are university, and your son is there, say, what course is he doing? Say, medicine here. He's doing economics, yes. Then you go and mention agriculture. Then you set it, see a certain orientation.
Yeah.
Then this guy is going to be a farmer. And then the farmer who wants to, because farmers are known to be poor.
Right.
We haven't changed our orientation that if you have eaten this afternoon, you should be thanking the farmer. If you have taken something this afternoon, you should be praying for a certain farmer. Our orientation towards the people who feed us is bad. We need to change national orientation. When we talk about agriculture, we need to change the perception of the people that agriculture is not a demeaning job. It's a start from a certain process.
Now, you're talking about changing our perception about agriculture. Before we can do, we need to change our perception. Now, how do we change that perception? Because we've been seeing this like from childhood. It has been the narrative that agriculture is not attractive. How do we change that mindset?
I will not agree with our childhood thinking. I will not, but because today, agriculture is very attractive. And when you capture it within the context of agribusiness, you are good to go. And like I explained the steps, that agriculture is not only about food production. It's also about food processing. It's also about food transporting. You can take a business, like I explained to you, in just processing of agriculture. Once you process and promote Ghanaian eating what we produce, you have the gari in many forms. And we, as Ghanaians, we change the foreign taste that we have. That when food comes from outside, is the best. So we are going to buy rice. Our women, we want to encourage you. You are going to buy rice. Ask of made in Ghana rice.
Okay.
The days that we have made in Ghana rice with stones and those things are past. Today, the Ghana Irrigation Development Authority, GIDA, ICOR, Irrigation Company of the Upper East Region, ICOR, are able to organize rice production in a way that Ghana has healthier rice than the ones we import. The ones we import is somebody's surplus. They produce, they are eating the best and exporting the surplus.
Right.
You don't know the shelf life of what you call perfume rice in a certain bag. But when Ghanaian rice is coming from the north, you know it will not take less than 3 months. It's coming from the Afife area in the Volta region. It will not take more than 3 months. 2 months is on the table. So it is fresh. It is nutritious. What Ghanaian women and men need to do is like the students are doing gari jollof. We must also learn how to cook our own rice. We shouldn't use the technology we have known from the days of the slave mentality that anything abroad is good, including its food. So we learned the way to cook it. No. Cooking Ghanaian rice needs some skills. We must also pick it up so that we consume our rice.
Let's talk about welfare of the agricultural workers. Over the years, will you say that the welfare conditions of agricultural workers are stable now, or they are getting better, or they are still, you know, the way they used to be?
Over the years, we have not taken agriculture serious. We have not taken agricultural workers serious. That's why I call for the national reset on the way we think about the people who grow our food and they serve their food. They are professionals in their own space, and we must respect them. We have even called on the TVET programs, TVET and educational programs, that we should begin to roll programs in agriculture. That if a farmer had been there, he grows maize, and then his maize, when he comes there and the maize experts come, they go to the farmer to go and learn. But the farmer is not certified.
Okay.
So we said TVET should roll programs that if you are a maize farmer and you have grown it for some time, there should be a TVET exams that you can write. Not English. Our language is not English. Our language is Ewe, is Gan, is Krobo, is Chi, is Sisala, and the rest. So don't put subject farmers to write in English and say that they have failed because they didn't write good English. Mm. They fail good English, but they produce good maize. Test them based on the maize they have produced. Okay. And if that farmer is very good, you can certify him and give him a certificate that you are an expert, and TVET is giving you a diploma in maize production.
Right.
You didn't go to any university.
Okay.
But on the farm, one group of very important service provided frontline people are the agricultural extension agents.
Okay.
If we want agriculture to develop, we need one extension officer to about 400 to 500 farmers. Today, as we sit, when we talk about one extension officer, is servicing between 1,400 to 1,500 workers.
Wow.
And agriculture today in the reset must be scientific, must use AI techniques. So we need more of those people. And they are sitting at home. So Gawu is calling to the Minister of Finance to release money to the sector agencies to recruit more of the agricultural extension agents for fish extension, for crop extension, and for also animal extension.
Okay.
These are the people our farmers are waiting for to modernize agriculture. You cannot modernize agriculture without the scientific part of it. Mm. And that is what our young people are looking up to.
Right.
When those things change, they will see agriculture lucrative and enter the space.
Now, how do you think AI and technology can help, you know, improve the working conditions of these agricultural workers that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think there is so much knowledge in the five areas I mentioned, in even crop production. There is knowledge on AI. Today you can talk to chat GPT, and sometimes it will lie to you, but sometimes it will tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Today there is knowledge out there that we can see. The FAO, we in Gawu, we have a lot of information that we have developed on how to use AI to improve ourselves in our agricultural safety, crop production, fish production, and the rest, all of it. There is enough knowledge that we can use AI to support.
Let's talk more about the youth going into agriculture. What do you think are some of the measures that government can take to make agriculture more attractive to the young generation?
Agriculture is about land.
Okay.
It's about land. That is a major. There are other scientific ways which you can discuss later. We have internal farming, house gardening, and those things. But agriculture is about land. Those days in Accra here, when you are driving by the roadside, you see a lot of vegetables, cabbage, lettuce, okra, and the rest being grown. Nowadays, estate developers have marshaled their forces to take away all those lands from the small farmers. It is important for government to demarcate land. We call it land use capability classification. So the government, through the district assemblies, so for Greater Accra like this, in our mapping, we must have land or agricultural zones. Mm. So for Greater Accra, we map area. We cannot have an Accra only full of buildings without greens. Mm. We will destroy ourselves. We have only, now the sun is shining, it is the green that absorbs the heat from the sun and turns it to something that we can breathe and we breathe. But let's assume Accra without green. And I think government should have green zones in Accra. And that same must apply to the farming communities. Government must protect agricultural land. That's why when I heard the Minister of Agriculture saying we are going to create land banks, we were happy. And there is one of the things that can make the youth come into agriculture because they will not struggle to land. And Gabu is saying that let us call those places at the district our green zone.
We've talked about how governments can help their agricultural workers. Now, in attaining agricultural self-reliance, how can the agricultural workers themselves, what role do they also have to play in ensuring that Ghana gets to the stage where we have agricultural self-reliance?
Farmers must take agriculture as business. Okay. So now it's not just about agriculture, it's agri-business. And that is what your station is talking about. Mm-hmm. And Gawu agrees with you that it's agri-business. So let's run agriculture as business. The capital you are using to do your farm, any money you spend from it, outside it, you must document it. Mm. And you cannot be using your capital for other social things. Mm. You must use your capital for the job. So you treat agriculture as business. The people, if you are a farmer yourself, at the end of the month, you must look at how much you are paying yourself.
Okay.
So you must pay yourself. If your wife is on the farm with you, don't abuse the wife, your wife and the children. They just go and farm for you and those things. Put a figure down that you pay your wife.
Okay.
And the children get something for education.
Finally, if you had the attention of all youth in Ghana, people who are looking to pursue careers in agribusiness, what will you tell them concerning the advantages in agriculture?
Chuboy.
Yay.
Chuboy.
Yay.
The youth, we need to come together. For me, from the trade union, I say that let the young people in agriculture also form a section of the trade union movement. Mm. Let's say youth in agriculture under Gawu.
Okay.
And then we take it from there. We start talking about what they need to do. We will start, the way our system is, you sometimes need to remind government of certain things it has promised. And when we are united, does not only pose a threat. It's not a threat. When we are united, does not mean we are uniting for strike or good things. We are uniting for development.
Right.
So I think all the young people must come into the agricultural space. Agriculture is the future of our nation. And join the bus today. So in 10 years' time, you can be a conglomerate or some agricultural business tycoon.
Thank you so much for having us today. This has been an amazing conversation. Well, this brings us to the end of today's conversation about agriculture. Let us make agriculture appealing to the youth of Ghana again. Yeah. My name is Sarah Etiemo. Thank you for the time.
Imagine a family without a home. Imagine a song without a voice. Imagine a church without prayers. Imagine a government without citizens. Imagine democracy without journalists. Imagine a world without the media. Life is full of issues.
name is Pamela from Customer Service. Please revalidate your account by texting your Ghana card number to 0500-247.
Hey, Abili, wabidim.
Madam, give me the numbers behind your ATM card. I'm calling from the head office.
An email was delivered across to our customers this morning.
Confirm if this is your bank account. 100.
Into real investment. Because for people like that down there, my people, the microeconomic, you know, people, operators, we're still struggling to see those gains. So yes, if you're calling for them to invest, have we also thought about some of the risk that they're also going to be looking at? Caleb?
Well, I think from the ministry's perspective, you know, they've done the, you know, macroeconomic indicator, and they've done the changes at the macro level. Now we need to wait for things to trickle down to the micro level. And that's what Kofi was speaking about when he spoke about the small the savings and loans companies and all of that. You know, most of these things, they take time, unfortunately. Yeah. Because even for the traditional banks, they were charging about 34% interest rates at the peak of our crisis. So if you go to a bank and you want to take a loan, you have to pay 34% interest rates. And most of them are not long-term loans.
Yeah.
They don't give you 10 or 20 years to pay them back. Mm-hmm. They are very short-term loans, 34%. So you cannot grow your business.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've come from that high to about 11% now. So it will take some time before it gets to the micro. And then I think from the policy perspective, they are saying they've done their job. They've made Ghana a very, you know, suitable climate for business, very stable climate. And I think the major thing that the government is banking its hopes on is the PCI with the IMF, the new arrangement that we've gone into with the IMF. Because when we spoke to George when he was in Washington, the majority of the investors were very worried. They said, yeah, we see the gains Ghana has made, but then we've seen this before. In 2018, 2019, we saw this before the crisis. We saw how Ghana was doing very well, but then because of some small external shocks, we went into the crisis. So I think the PCI is the finance ministry's way of saying that even though we've done the work, we want to assure you that, okay, we are going to walk the talk. And then interestingly, the PCI spans the next election cycle, 2028. So investors will now not be worried about what happens when we go to 2028, when government needs to increase spending and all of that. So I think from the policy perspective, the macro indicators point to a very good direction. And now the new PCI arrangements makes Ghana look more favorable in the eyes of investors. So I think we might see some action about that.
Okay.
If you're the number one producer of gold in Africa, you're definitely open for investment. And investors are looking at almost all the natural resources in terms of the mineral side. We've seen lithium, we've seen gold, we've seen some local takeovers, we've seen some, you know, stuff here and there. But I think the most important thing is how we've been able to maintain, right? So if you look at, we've done this, the Middle East war has persisted for more than a month, right? Yeah. And look at where we are at the moment. We've been able to build some level of resistance to international shocks. And this is the litmus test to that kind of reserve we claim we have built and then the buffers we have. And we've been able to do more than 100 days. And is it more than 100 days, right?
Or of the war?
The war is more than 100. And we are still where we are, even though the city is depreciating, but not at that fast rate. Even though we are seeing inflation go up, but just look at the change. It's not that high. It's very marginal at the moment. So investors are looking at all of this and say that, well, there is that real test at the moment to see what the Ghanaian economy could go through in a global crisis. And we are talking about energy. And energy affects almost everything. And we are talking about a space or a region that accounts for about 30% of the world crude. And still we are able to move on, talk about good news. Why? Because we still have gold, we still have our minerals. And that for me is the risk, right? The biggest risk is possibly not the Middle East crisis, but what might happen to gold prices maybe in the future. And that's where maybe investors will be looking at going forward.
Well, definitely, but we're wishing our country well because we just want to see that everything plays out correctly for us. But again, BOG is saying that we're trying to increase our foreign exchange market by to $1.2 billion. Kofi, do you think this is going to give us some long-term stability?
Well, in fact, that will be what we'll be discussing on the big analysis. We'll try and see the risks involved. And it's going to be for the month of June.
June, yeah.
The intervention is about $1.2 billion. We've seen this before, so we'll be doing the analysis in terms of the demand pressure. Can this actually help maintain it or give it some level of a cushion or absorption? That's what we're going to discuss on big analysis here, right here on Beyond the Numbers. So I think that the announcement alone is going to create some level of, you know, confidence.
Yeah.
But we'll do all the analysis and see where, I mean, to what extent with this 1.2 billion.
But I like the defense, though. So viewers, you want to stay with us. We'll be right back shortly with Big Analysis. Please stay.
The city appreciation has to be put into proper context. Much as you want to have city stability in nominal terms, the important thing here is to ensure that in real terms, the city is not appreciating persistently in real terms. And so the committee, and that is the MPC, they went into a lot of deliberation looking at the real movement of the exchange rate. And we think that where we are now, we don't have that problem of real appreciation that will impact adversely on our competitiveness. And so for now, we think that the trend is in line. We are observing it continuously though, but the appreciation is largely driven by the market. It's not something that the central bank is using its reserves. If you look at the data pack that we have put out, it was put out yesterday on our website, you can see that our reserve program is growing, is going up. So we are not using our reserves to intervene in the market. And therefore, the appreciation you are seeing is driven by our economic policy, the stance of monetary policy, is driven by the international flows that remittances, cocoa, gold, and the likes. If you look at the external sector performance, the current account is in surplus, trade balance is doing so well. These are the factors that are driving movement in the exchange rate.